Welcome to Fat Camp Show Number 5 for September 14th, 2015. This is the Pipe Show. That is what's coming down the Pipe Show. We're going to be talking about what came out at Eurobike and some of the other exciting stuff out there. Fatbike.com presents Fat Camp, a monthly podcast covering different technical aspects of fat and plus-size bikes. Look for all our shows at fat-bike.com/fatcamp or subscribe to our feed on iTunes.
Here we are, show number 5. We're going to call it the Pipe Show. No innuendo.
None.
No innuendos, no outuendos.
This is all about what's coming down the pipe.
This is what's coming down the pipe. And so Fat Camp here is going to, where I guess Ken and I are going to talk about some Eurobike stuff and some recent announcements maybe.
Yeah, we're starting to end up seeing the big product launches going on right now. We've got, you know, Eurobike that just finished up. We got Interbike that's coming up in like a week and a half.
Sounds like show number six though.
It definitely will be. By the time the show airs, it'll probably be going on that weekend. So scratch what I ended up saying about Interbike. It'll be happening. But a lot of exciting stuff typically gets released out into the fat bike world right now. And Eurobike has, the last couple of years, really kind of shown most everything that's come out. So we kind of get a preview for what we can look forward to in 2016.
We get these seasonal releases of stuff.
Yeah, and I guess, you know, and that kind of to explain.
Sea Otter does some stuff in the spring, and then we get this in the fall, and then in the winter there's there's something out there like a frost bike.
It used to end up being that Interbike was like the bomb for everybody releasing everything, and now things have changed a lot because now there's a lot smaller releases throughout, and in different vendors, you know, like Trek will end up having their little thing, and QBP has their little thing, and you know, Scott Bikes has their little thing. So there's been a lot of different very dealer oriented. I'm not going to call them shows, but like events that have released a lot of cool stuff in recent years or recent months. You know, that's where we've, you know, seen things like the Stash get released, and, you know, some of the Rocky Mountain bikes got released at Sea Otter. And, you know, there's just been this trickle of stuff coming out. Like, you know, the Scott, they've got a bunch of
huge
B-plus bikes.
Yeah.
So, you know, we can get into some of that stuff a little bit later on, but we're going to try to end up kind of summing up a lot of the cool stuff we've seen coming up to this point out of all these different shows. But before we do that, we were going to end up getting into some of the local stuff that's got us excited or that we've seen recently.
Well, why don't we take a break, though, and then we'll come back after this little intro, and we're going to talk about some local affairs.
Sounds good. All about local affairs.
Welcome to the Pipe Show, campers.
Welcome back, campers. That was the sound of happiness being opened there.
Ah, yes. It's a nice DIPA.
So we're going to start off this section talking about kind of what's been going on locally.
Something a little different.
Yeah, there's been some interesting stuff. I told Gomez that I was going to write up about my Ortishore experience. Those of you that maybe are not from the Midwest. Ortishore is one of the big point-to-point races. It's the first one that kicks off the Midwest Triple Crown. Yeah, and it's a really cool race up in the UP. Starts up in Negaunee, where it's kind of like a big mining area, and you get lots of
red rocks.
Yeah, and just, I mean, it's like red dust because of the iron and everything. But you ride past mines and stuff, and then you kind of head out into the wilderness.
Around through Ishpeming.
Yep. Yeah, and then, you know, you get to ride up a luge run and stuff. And it's pretty much mostly two tracks. It's not the most mountain bikey of courses. So it really doesn't highlight the best trails of the UP.
But it's more of the 50-mile.
Yeah. It's a 48-mile race, and it's a nice adventure. And you finish right down on the shores of Lake Superior, and it's a really, really, really well-run event.
Good, and the course is conducive to riding your fat bike.
Oh yeah, it's a great fat bike course. Yeah, and it's also a great tandem course, which is what we're kind of talking about here. So I've done it several times on a tandem. I've always done the 48-mile race, but this year I ended up having an offer from Scott Quirine's significant other to see if I wanted to end up riding a tandem and doing the soft rock, which is a 28-mile race, because Scott was going to be racing the pro race and she didn't have anything to do. And they were wondering if I wanted to go up to the UP and ride Copper Harbor and, you know, the Marquette trails, and then just all happen to do this little event on a tandem to boot. So I couldn't really say no. And we had a great time. I guess real quickly, you know, any of you, if you get a chance to go ride Copper Harbor or any of the, like the Marquette, specifically the Marquette South Trails, I mean, both are incredible trail systems.
Totally amazing, yep.
Yeah, the UP has got it going on when it comes to really, really, really quality trail.
I certainly do. Well, how was that soft rock race, though?
Oh, the soft rock was awesome.
Sissy rock.
Right? Yeah,
it's a long drive for just a short race.
Yeah, for a 28-miler, but which is net downhill, which would makes it all the more friendly for fat bikes and tandems.
Well, tell us about that fat bike tandem. How'd it do?
The fat bike tandem rocks. I absolutely love that bike. Hopefully this doesn't come off as being, you know, too egotistical or anything, but that bike is still undefeated.
Oh yeah, I forgot about that.
Yeah, Quirin and I ended up winning Iceman last year on it, and then we ended up doing Mud, Sweat, and Beers with I did Mud, Sweat, and Beers with a different stoker. We won that, and then we ended up winning Hors du Jour also, the soft rock race. And that, I don't want to end up focusing on that piece, but fat tandem is where it's at if you're getting any kind of off-road tandem. I am completely and totally sold on that. I've ridden a really nice 29er tandem. I thought that was a huge step up from the 26er tandems that I've ridden, but oh my goodness, running a fat tandem, if you're going to get any kind of tandem for any kind of riding off-road, you got to go fat tandem, because you finally have a contact patch that matches the mass you're dealing with on that kind of bike.
What was your wheel setup on that? And tires?
I kept my usual, I pretty much only have one fat tandem wheel set, and that's Clown Shoes. Built up fairly burly build. And then I ran Husker Du's front and rear. That was the same setup I ran at Iceman. And it had worked really well there, but in kind of hindsight, did not have enough knobs on the front, because there were some really sketchy points at Hors du Jour where you've got some really high speed downhills. I think our max speed during the race was somewhere around 48 miles an hour.
You know, an average speed of 17, 18 is, you know, normal in that kind of race.
Yeah, and it, you know, when you're going 48 miles an hour on a gravel two track, going around corners,
hang on to your saddle.
Yeah, you want to have some knobs on that front tire. So,
those
were 3.8s.
Okay,
and it's just, you know, that tire works really well on an 80 mil rim, but once you get to 100 mil rim, the knobs don't go out very far. The knobs aren't that huge.
In hindsight, what would you have liked to have?
Oh, I would love to have the Flow Beast.
Okay.
Not much. Oh yeah. Okay. Yeah, definitely. That would be a great tire, because I think it would still roll really fast, and it's got just excellent side knobs. It's gonna handle really well.
I haven't heard, you know, I was thinking Flow Beast and Dunder Beast is just groomed, you know, ride groomed.
No. I think I've played around a little bit in the dirt with those on my single bike, and those are a really, really, really nice riding tire.
Cool.
They roll a little bit slower than something like a Husker Du, which on a single is not generally that big a deal unless you're in kind of soft, you know, conditions where you really need a lot of traction. But a tandem?
Yeah.
Hell yeah. I'm all about that for the front tire.
Gotcha.
So I think I'm going to be doing tandem at the Peak to Peak race.
Crystal Mountain.
Yep.
Yep. That's Lower Michigan warm up to Iceman.
Exactly. That's coming up in October, and the Flow Beast will be in full effect for that.
That'll be good.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, anybody out there who might be, you know, thinking about some sort of tandem setup, you know, tandem fat bike, it's a super versatile way to ride, and I would highly recommend it. I would recommend
going to QuirinCycles.net.
Well, yeah, Quirin makes a mighty fine bike. There's some other options out there that, you know, are decent too. It's just, I would not go with a 29er tandem. I would go with a fat bike tandem in a heartbeat if I were
anybody. So recent
anybody.
Happenings, you had to go up to Copper Harbor, you had to ride Marquette South, and then you had to win a soft rock.
Life sucks, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, I had a hard outro to my summer there.
Yeah.
So yeah, good times up in the UP.
Right on. Something else happened though. We've got a recent a friend of ours drank the 29er Plus Kool-Aid recently.
Yep, he started bike doping.
Yep. Completely bike doping. He got off his little pizza cutter. And built up a Judas Goat, which is a fat bike that you can convert to 29 plus very easily with a adjustable headset and
sliders
in the back, so you can tuck that wheel as far back away from you if you need to, or tuck it up underneath it if you might get some traction. But anyway, I went out for the ride with him for the first time, and he about lost his shit. You know, he pretty much freaked out about the 29er plus. Ood and odd, and I think he even, as few times as he does, he might have recorded this on the Strava website there, and he's pretty sold on this plus size bike and what it does.
Well, and I guess, you know, if it was just one guy and him being geeked about a new bike, that probably wouldn't be something worthy of talking about on the show. However, every single person that has made the switch to this style bike has the same experience. I mean, you ended up going through it, Andy, what, 9-10 months ago?
Yep.
You know, I was a little more than a year ago. I guess it was a year and a half or so ago.
A local dentist has done it.
Yeah, we've had
another friend up north has done it. We got another one here.
Yeah, the tribe just keeps getting bigger by the day. And I mean, and I guess, you know, the thing that's so noteworthy about it isn't just like, okay, this is a really fun bike, but it's like, holy crap, is this thing fast?
Yeah.
And then, you know, holy crap, does it ride super, super, super well. So, you know, I just, you know, if people are on the fence out there about considering a 29 plus wheel set or something for your fat bike, I mean, don't hesitate.
Don't forget, if you're a fat biker, you can put it on there.
Yeah. It's one of the most awesome upgrades that you can end up doing. Makes a really, really, really big difference.
Yep. So we've got news from a fat tandem bike race. We've got another disciple of the 29 plus. So those are some recent happenings that are happening around northern lower Michigan. But
and then the other big, big thing to happen around here.
Big thing.
It would be
everywhere.
Yeah, the V-Tire 2XL. And this really does lead into kind of the show season and Eurobike and stuff, because this got released actually a little bit before, you know, fatbike.com seemed
to. If you hunted on the internet, you could find it.
Well,
then the release date, you know.
Yeah, exactly. It was not really one of those big announcements. It really didn't get a lot of press, but it's a pretty significant jump forward for the fat bike world.
Totally. And it blew up fatbike.com.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. There was a lot of interest on there.
Somebody wrote an article about it and previewed it before it was even able to ride it yet. But, you know, like Ken usually does, he dissects a tire real quick.
No, and it's been a fun tire to check out because, I mean, kind of to put it into context, I don't know how much, you know, people just, you know, when you read on the sidewall, it's, you know, a 26 by 5.05, that doesn't really mean squat because there's all sorts of tires that are labeled as one thing and they don't come out that size.
It's a giant effing tire.
It is. This thing is a big jump forward.
But it's not obnoxious, though, I don't think.
Well, I mean, let's put this into context. It is approximately an inch and a half bigger in diameter than a Bud and a Lou on 100. Yeah. So, I mean, when you think about that, like if you're going from a 26er to a 29er, that's a 3-inch jump.
Mm-hmm.
So this is basically the same as going from some sort of 650B wheel set up to a 29er, or going from a 4-inch, you know, fat bike to a 5-inch fat bike.
Yeah.
This just went up that amount again.
It's crazy. But it's not like laughable. It's not like, hot, you know, they just did this for fun. This thing's going to work, don't you think?
Oh, I think it definitely will. This is the most promising tread pattern I've ever seen come out of V-Tire.
Where do you think it's going to be? What's its strongest point, do you think?
Well, it's definitely unconsolidated snow tire. The thing that'll be interesting is that the big diameter, it's kind of like with the 29 plus thing where you gain all this rollability and everything. You can ride over stuff. It elongates your contact patch, you know, kind of when people talk about the difference between like a 26er or a 29er, you know, the contact patch is a lot longer. So right. It tends to carve very well and do some things like that. And I'll be interested to see what this does because it kind of you know, supercharges that whole diameter thing, like, to the next level.
It's not going to be fast at all, though.
I don't know.
Really?
It very well might. I've played around with the tire on the beach, and that's pretty much it.
Okay.
So, you know, that really doesn't tell you a whole lot.
That's a unique kind of environment, though, I guess.
It is. And, you know, it obviously had a ton of float, and it rode super, super well on the beach.
Okay.
But to kind of put this into context, the difference between riding like a 4-inch tire and then going with the Bud and the Lou, that was kind of my eye-opening beach experience, because the Bud and the Lou allowed me to ride up, you know, like the four dunes and stuff like that, which, okay, I was never able to make it up before.
Never above the high water mark, though.
Unless it's a park or some other place like that. We've had a little run-in with a local private property owner, and we had a little debate about where the high water mark was.
So you got the Bud and the Lou, yeah, up in the four dunes.
Yeah. So, you know, you had massive traction, but it ended up being slow.
Okay.
You know, it's like it felt like when you were in soft sand that it was a slow tire. So then the big fat Nard comes out, you know, 4.8-inch Nard. And that blew my mind.
It's bigger than Bud and Lou.
It's hard to say. It's at least as big. You know, it's like it might just be the two pairs of tires that I've got. But my 4.8-inch Nards did come in bigger than my 4.8-inch, you know, Bud and Lou.
And now that's what you ride on the beach.
Yeah, and that's awesome because it rolls really fast, and you've got all of the volume of the Bud and the Lou. So that was kind of like my gold standard, and I really didn't expect anything to end up doing better than that.
Okay.
Now, this V-Tire one seems to roll at least as well through the sand because you've got this bigger volume tire. It's not, you know, it's hard to talk about a 4.8-inch tire knifing into the sand, but it's not knifing at all. You know, I mean, it's really floating on top.
Well, I'm just looking at pictures of it, and it just dwarfs what I thought was the fattest of the fat.
Yeah, that's exactly it. That's what it does.
Huh.
And, you know, the thing that's interesting about this is that it is so much bigger in diameter that, you know, most bikes won't fit this. I mean, you shouldn't buy this, you know, and think it's just going to fit my bike.
Yeah.
You know, there's very, very few bikes that it's going to fit on. It sounds like, you know, based on, like, you know, the forum world, which, right, I don't know how much faith to put in. It sounds like the Blackbrow, if you put the rockers all the way back, it'll fit front and rear in that. It sounds like the Moonlander.
Okay.
Yeah, if you run it way back in the sliders,
in those horizontals, yeah,
it'll fit in that.
But you're running it in the front, no problem with what kind of fork you got?
I've tested it on two different forks. I mean, one of them is a custom Quirin fork that's on my tandem, and that I had ample clearance. But my Borealis on 100, it also fit just fine. So that's what I spent most of my time on just for my beach riding, because that's my single bike setup.
Okay,
and that's worked really well. I don't think I'm going to be able to run it on the back of the tandem anymore. It's already stretched out enough that I have minimal clearance on the tandem in the rear. So I think I'm pretty much stuck with my Lou in the back of the tandem.
But fat bike riders could, is it a safe risk to get one? Can you still get them?
Yeah, you can probably fit it on the front. From what I can tell, they're still available. I ended up checking J&B Importers. That's maybe a place that your shop can connect with and, you know, get tires from. They still had some in stock as of the time we're recording this.
And these things got to be like $150-$200.
No, they're actually pretty cheap. I don't know exactly what the retail is because I've never seen it listed anywhere.
Oh, okay.
But you can find them online. I think they're like $130 a tire.
Dang.
So, you know, all things considered, not a cheap tire, but
have you seen a cheap 5-inch tire?
Exactly.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah.
6-inch tire?
These aren't quite 6 inches. You know, like out of the box, when I aired them up, they measured in, I'm trying to remember, I think it was like 5.2, 5.3 inches.
Okay.
So a solid 1/2 inch wider than a Bud and a Lou.
Gotcha.
They're going to stretch. You know, I was comparing that to a fairly worn set of Bud and Lou's.
So what do you think? Is Salsa going to do some redesigning? Is Surly going to say, whoa, we need a new bike?
My guess is it's going to end up being what the market dictates. You know, if people are like, I need a bike for these, the bikes are going to get made.
Okay.
Because what, and this is pure speculation, but what I think V-Tire did was they looked at where chainring position is, and this kind of goes back to that show we had a little while ago about bike geometry.
Okay.
And they were like, okay, what is the widest possible tire that we can fit and just clear the chain on, like an optimized, like super fat as you can go with standard stuff.
Yeah.
You know, one by setup.
Okay.
And this is the tire. I mean, it literally like cuts it 1 to 2 millimeters away from not being able to do it.
Might they start putting notches in those chain stays?
It's not a matter of the chain stays. It's chain clearance.
Oh.
I mean, you got to get the chain ring further and further and further out.
Yeah.
So then you have to end up putting, you know, the cog set further and further out from the center line of the bike. I mean, to kind of give you perspective, I don't know if people...
steer.
Well, yeah, you kind of have to.
Right.
So when this tire was first, like, pictures were allowed into the wild, it wasn't quite a year ago. It was maybe 8 months ago. And
pictures were allowed in the wild.
It showed up at the Taipei bike show.
Okay.
And it was gargantuan. I mean, it was way bigger than the version that we're seeing that can buy right now.
Okay.
Yeah. So, I mean, it was...
They've tamed it down.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So instead of being like a 5.2-inch tire, it was a 5.7-inch tire. And instead of being, I think it's, what is it? It's like 31 and a half inches in diameter.
Okay.
Somewhere in there. Don't quote me. It might be a little bit off on that. Okay. But it was a good inch even bigger in diameter than that.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah. It completely and totally dwarfed a Bundaloo.
Okay.
And it would not have fit on any production bike. Anything. You wouldn't even be able to do it with the drivetrain configuration we have right now.
Okay.
Like, I was talking to Scott about this because we were seeing if there's any way we were going to be able to score some either like early production or prototypes or just anything.
Uh-huh.
Because, you know, it was such a monster tire. I mean, he was actually talking about offsetting 190 mil hub in the rear. So basically pulling a Pugsley Moonlander type setup, but with 190 hub. Yeah, and it wasn't going to be offset a lot. It was going to be offset, you know, like, you know, 10 millimeters,
okay,
maybe 15 millimeters off the center.
Uh-huh.
And then what you would end up doing is you'd end up finding some way to end up running your cranks as wide as you possibly could, and then, like, maybe run a triple crankset spider, and you would put your chain ring, potentially even with some spacers, to get it as far out as that crank arm would let you go.
Just some type of Rube Goldberg machine you got for a
it would be a funky machine.
Yeah,
you'd have to do a lot to end up getting it to fit in there.
Okay.
But when the production tire ended up getting released, it didn't end up being that big.
Okay.
And like I said, I think I can only speculate, but, you know, I think what they did was like, okay, this is the widest setup that you can get right now as far as where, you know, your chain clearance is. Chain clearance is the limiter of how wide these tires can be.
Okay.
Let's build it up to that standard. And they nailed it. I mean, I don't know if it wasn't intentional, you know, they just lucked into it because they really made the biggest possible tire.
Whoops, we did it right.
Yeah, they made the biggest tire that you can get and not have some funky drive or anything.
Wow.
But that said, even though it might fit on some bikes, this is going to do some really funky stuff to your bike. I mean, it's going to...
How so?
Well, I mean, the diameter is around 1.5 inches bigger than a Bundaloo on 100.
Okay.
So that means that it's going to raise your bottom bracket by 3/4 of an inch.
Oh, okay. That's significant.
It's a fair amount.
Yeah.
So, I mean, this is kind of like trying to fit a 29er plus on your bike when it's really only designed for 4-inch tires.
Uh-huh.
You know, it's going to have implications on the geometry and stuff. So when people have set up their bikes with these tires, they're like, holy crap, I don't have standover clearance.
Right.
I'm going to totally nut myself in the middle of the winter when I'm in soft stuff.
Right.
So, you know, it's already been kind of evident that you can run these on some bikes, but it's really not an optimal setup.
Okay.
So that's where I'm kind of stoked because I've been working with Quirine, and coming up here in the next couple of weeks, I think, you know, we're going to end up having a bike like ready to roll.
That's designed to fit these.
Yeah. It's going to be the powder bike.
And are they 5.8? Is that what you're calling them? Or are they 5.1?
I mean, they're labeled as a 5.05.
Okay.
But their true size is really, I mean, once they stretch out and stuff, it's going to be like 5.3, 5.4.
Okay.
So, I mean, it's going to be about a 5.5-inch tire.
So when we talk about 5-inch tires now, we're going to have to make sure that we're not talking about skinny 5-inch tires and fat 5-inch tires.
Well, I think there's going to be 5-inch and I think there's going to be 5.5-inch or whatever you want to call them. Right. Because, you know, like when we talk about a 5-inch tire, typically they're talking about like a Bud, a Lou. Right. You know, you might even get into like the Dillinger 5 realm, which really isn't. I mean, that's like a 4.5-inch tire. Uh-huh. But, I mean, like the Bud and the Lou, those are like 4.7-ish. They're not really even a 4.8-inch tire. They're not a 5-inch tire by any means. So, you know, nomenclature will eventually catch up. But it'll be interesting to see if these things actually catch on.
Wow.
But I think, you know, for riding in powder, I think they're just going to be the bomb. One I've noticed in sand, seems like a really good tread design. It doesn't have any adverse handling effects. It's got really good traction. I don't know how much of that is just because it's a freaking big tire, or how much of it is it's a really good tread design.
Right now.
Yeah, I've converted the front over to tubeless, but
okay. how'd that do?
Went really well. The bead is fairly tight. I think it's going to end up, you know, the casings are designed well to end up going tubeless.
Sounds good.
Yeah. So
how low could you drop them down to pressure wise?
I really didn't do a whole lot because I mean,
you get lower than you can on a regular 4.8.
Oh yeah, no because kidding. Yeah, I didn't. I measured like one time, like when I left the house, I had I think it was like 5 psi, uh-huh. And then I lowered it because it felt like it was too hard. Whereas normally with a Bud and Lou, if I'm going to the beach, 5 psi is like probably almost too soft.
Okay,
and I dropped it down a little more, but I have no idea how low it actually ended up getting. All I know is that the contact patch was so huge that it was like, okay, I got to run this thing like another 1 to 2 PSI below what I would ever do my Bud and my Lou's. And, you know, in the winter, I mean, I'll run the Bud and the Lou's down like 3-4 PSI in like super soft conditions.
Right.
So I think at 3 or 4 PSI, these are going to feel normal, fast. It's not going to be like that. Okay. You know, I'm going to run my tires at, you know, my Bud and my Lou at 3-4 PSI and have traction and be able to get through stuff, but it's going to feel slow as snot. This will be actually roll fast.
Can you imagine, though, riding behind that with your 3.8-inch tires?
Well, and that's the thing that Scott and I have talked about, because this is basically
in front of you, you know?
Yeah, this is like the grooming machine. And then, you know, the game of operation that all the guys play behind you where they try to end up, you know, staying in your tracks
right. Is
going to be so much easier. Because if you're running a skinny tire, you know, you've got like an inch on either side that,
right. You
know, you can avoid getting shocked by going to the edges.
Inverted balance beam just got a little bit easier for you.
Yeah, totally. So that will be interesting to see. You know, it's kind of like, I know what, you know, like you and my experience was, I was able to get onto the Bud and Lou's well before you.
Oh,
and
yeah.
You swore at me and, you know. An awful lot because of it. However, at the same time, I would be able to tamp down stuff and then you'd be able to follow in my tracks.
Sure.
And it really extended your ability with the 4-inch tire. And I'm hoping that we have a similar thing happen with
this. The jump from 3.8 to 4.8 is going to be the same as going from 4.8 to a 5.8.
Pretty darn close. Because, I mean, if you look at most of the 3.8 4-inch tires really were right around 4-inch.
Okay.
You know, it's like if let's say you put it on a 100-mil rim.
Yeah.
Those things measure out at 4 inches.
Okay.
And you put a Bud or a Lou on there, and they measure out at, like, you know, 4.7.
Okay.
So you're really only talking a 0.7-inch width difference.
Right.
Whereas what we're talking about right now, once this thing fully stretches out, you're going to go from, like, 4.7, which is Bud and Lou territory, and you're going to go up to, you know, this, like, 5.3, 5.4-inch tire. So it's going to be almost the same jump in width.
Hey, honey, I might need to buy a new front tire because my fat tire bike isn't fat enough. I can hear it. That sounds great, though, man. I've been waiting for this to happen.
Well, and I guess, you know, to kind of jump back to what you were talking about, as of recording this, they're still available. You can get them. And they fit on the front of a lot of bikes.
All right.
And, you know, from what I've found, if you're running a really fat front tire and a little bit skinnier rear tire, you can really extend the range of your bike.
Oh, okay.
So, you know, if it's one of those kind of conditions where you got to worry about breaking through crust or this, that, or whatever, you're kind of like just hovering, you're not sinking in too much. You know, if you shift your weight forward, there's a lot of times that you can get your rear tire to kind of lift up and kind of plane or whatever you want to call it. Mm-hmm. And you can get through pretty marginal situations. So, you know, running different size tires front and rear can be a really big plus.
Is there a negative to it?
The only thing is
stupid.
Well,
it's, I don't know.
Yeah, it's, you know, I'd say the biggest thing is that, you know, you're pushing down a bigger patch. You have to compact a bigger patch of snow in front of you.
Yeah.
And you're not taking as much advantage of that full patch behind. Okay. So there is a little more resistance. There's more weight. It'll affect the geometry of your bike because it's going to chill out more, which is actually probably a positive in a lot of situations. Sure. You know, yeah. It's going to lift the front end, so it's going to slacken out your head tube angle sure. and, you know, slow but down the handling. But that's a good thing yeah, in those February, conditions.
I want that.
Yeah. So, I mean, really, I think, you know, I'm kind of mincing hairs on this. I think in general, okay. most people are going to end up saying, oh, this is a big positive.
All right. Cool.
Yeah.
Well, hey, why don't we take a break? And come back and talk about Cannondale and Surly doing some new things.
Sounds like a plan.
All right, guys. Thanks. Good night. We'll talk to you later.
Little debut from the Amistad's children.
Yeah, Alice and Jane there wanted to get on the program, so they'll welcome us back. And we're talking about Cannondale. Isn't that right, Ken?
Yeah. Yeah, let's jump into Cannondale. Some exciting stuff. I mean, they're a little late to the party. You know, yep. they're just starting to get into, you know.
There's going to be a lot of people that are going to be late to this party.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Which is good.
Well, exactly, because, you know, there's a lot of good manufacturers of bikes out there,
right.
And everybody's going to have their own little take on it, and, you know, different people are going to find gold as, you know, they switch over and
oh, yeah.
see the light and yep. come over to the, you know, the
it's
fat
not
side.
A bike, it's good, man. Anyway.
No, but, so, okay, Cannondale released a couple of really cool bikes. The Bad Habit is one of them. This is a B-plus bike, full suspension. It looks really sweet.
It does. I'm just looking at it. It looks like a fun bike to ride.
Yeah.
I hate that we use this term, but it's sexy.
Yeah.
It is.
Yeah, it's a good-looking bike to my eye. You know, the lefty on the front.
I'm getting used to seeing lefties, you know. It's not as crazy as it used to look, you know.
Yeah, you know, it's a really lightweight suspension setup. I guess the big thing I'm really stoked about is that there's another person making some sort of fat plus sized fork, because, you know, Manitou really threw down. I've got to call out MRP. I'm sorry, I almost said White Brothers. That would be their old name, but MRP has been, you know, doing a really nice fork that fits 29 plus. But
this lefty is specific.
Yeah, I mean, this lefty will end up working just fine with a 650 B plus setup.
Could you run a 29er on it, you think?
Now, see, I'll be honest. This is where I start to get ignorant about this particular setup. I know that in 29 plus world, like a Fat B Nimble, which is not a true 3-inch tire,
right.
if it's just fine on a regular lefty.
Okay.
Whereas you cannot run a 3-inch tire on a regular lefty.
Oh,
you,
okay.
You'll start to run on the rub on the side.
Okay.
And if you really are riding the Fat B Nimble hard, you can get it to rub.
Oh.
So that's
Scott,
that.
Has Scott gotten it to rub?
Yeah. Oh yeah. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. That's a setup Scott's been running, and you know that's kind of your pure like racer boy cross country setup.
Yeah.
It's nice because it's got a lockout, but it's really not optimized towards hard riding. And quite frankly, you know, when you get to the plus sized tires, you can do some crazy stuff just because you've got so much more traction. And it's, you know, Scott doesn't feel like it's, you know, kind of up to the task for, you know, like when we were up in Copper Harbor and Marquette
yeah.
and doing moto trails and some yeah. stuff like that. You know, I don't want to put words in Scott's mouth, but it's just there's better option, fork options
mm-hmm.
than a lefty for that application.
Gotcha. Is this a boost?
Yep, this is a boost.
Okay. So we're seeing more boost.
Yep. And I mean, pretty much any plus bike you're going to see is going to be boost
okay.
because you can't run a normal drivetrain at this point. And I think you're going to see a lot of stuff switch over and just be boost, just in general, all 29ers.
This isn't the Cannondale bike that they re-released, is it?
Are you talking about the Beast of the East?
I think that's the one.
That would be the next one on my list. And I have a soft spot in my heart for the Beast of the East. I rode a Beast of the East for many years.
Oh, no shit.
Yeah, I absolutely loved that bike. The great part about the Beast of the East is that it was designed specifically for East Coast single track, which tends to end up being really steep, rocky. You want a lot of pedal clearance, very tight trails, and it was one of the best bikes of that era for that kind of terrain.
Huh? Steep head tube angle.
I know the version I had kind of fit the bill of a pretty traditional cross-country bike at that time. I think it was like 71, 73.
Oh, okay.
You know, 71 head tube angle, 73 seat tube angle, which pretty much everything in that era was built at. But it had a 13-inch high bottom bracket, which was crazy tall for that era. And it rode really well in tight single track.
Now, as Cannondale kept that same kind of feature going on with the re-release?
To a great extent, yes.
Okay.
They really tried to make it so it's still like a primo East Coast bike. Sounds like it's got a high bottom bracket. You can get it with a lefty on the front. I do think, you know, for that style of, you know, East Coast riding, the Plus bike is ideal because there's so many things going on under tire. And the big footprint just kind of mutes a lot of that out and kind of covers up mistakes or, you know, just what happens when your tire slips or whatever. So I think it's a really good application for, you know, that East Coast style of single track.
It sounds like Cannondale kind of relit their pipe and, you know, had a nice release. Again, really hot looking bike though.
Yeah. The one thing, I got to call them out on this. So the one thing that's really funky is that, they went with a boost rear hub. So it's a 148 spacing in the rear.
Right.
But they offset it. And, you know, I know there's a lot of Pugsley and, you know, Moonlander people out there. And asymmetrical is fine. There's nothing wrong with asymmetrical. But
it kind of looks retarded.
Nah, well, it's why go asymmetrical in this application when you've got 150 or 157 mil?
Well, I mean, yeah, you can swap wheels.
No, you can't because the wheel is not dished the same.
Okay.
So, you know, I 100% agree with you, like with a Pugsley and things like that.
Sure.
Being able to swap wheels front and rear, that is a huge benefit.
That's cool.
You know, I'm never going to end up, you know, disparaging anybody that mentions something like that. This, there's no swapping wheels.
Okay.
This, they did this for strength, which I understand, but why do a 148 rear hub instead of a 157? You would have gotten basically the same thing.
It sounds like we've discussed this before, though.
Yeah, that's a whole other show.
But that is weird, though. Yeah, an offset boost.
That's the one thing that was like making me scratch my head.
I'm
but
sure
otherwise,
they would have an answer, though.
Yeah, sweet bike.
Yep.
Very, very sweet bike.
Awesome.
Yep. And it's really good to see them jump into the fat bike world. And sort of along those same lines, you know, we were talking about yet another Plus bike offering.
Yeah.
We've got another fat bike fork. You know, okay, there's the fork that goes by many names. There's the Bluto.
Right.
You know, there's been a few different Euro offerings and things like that. But this is like a first, like, you know, really legit, you know, or I should say first. It's the second really legit fat bike fork.
What the hell is it? Don't you know? I'm sitting here on the edge of my seat.
Olaf.
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 Yeah.
Jeez, oh, Pete.
So, and the good part is it sounds like they went with the beefy fork dimensions. So I think this thing's going to be pretty darn stiff.
Pull up a picture of this.
It's going to have some really good suspension characteristics.
Okay.
You know, it throws in there a really, really good option for anybody looking for a fork for a fat bike.
Can you throw, here's a stupid question. Can you throw a lefty on anything?
Yes and no. I mean, I'll be honest. I don't know all the specifics. A lot of times there's like different adapters that you can run. If you go a custom bike, you can definitely do it.
Okay.
There's a lot of different ways you can make it work.
Wow.
So it,
cool.
I have not looked in specifically with the lefty Olaf compared to a lot of the other lefty offerings, but my guess is that a lot of the conversion kits would also work with this.
Does it matter on your hub spacing?
I'll be honest, I have not looked up that much what they're doing with their hubs.
Okay.
But, you know, if you're doing a lefty, you're going to have to build a specific front wheel anyways.
Right,
so it's not like you're going to reuse your wheel.
You're not going to try to use your own wheel. You're whatever it is, your 135, 150, or whatever.
Yep.
Okay. Huh. Cool, though.
Yeah. So, you know, I was pretty stoked to end up seeing, you know, I mean, Cannondale jumping in, big manufacturer jumping in the fat bike world, always good.
I love the names of this stuff, though, too. I mean, jeez, it's just, it's so cool that they, Olaf, a totally appropriate name for a fork. What? But did you see the day of the week coming down the pipe, though?
Oh, yes. And it's and my other brother, Daryl. You know, talking about good names, you know.
So moving on, Surly comes out with the Wednesday.
I was stoked to end up seeing him do that. And, you know, I really hope they keep offering the Pugsley, because the Pugsley is a classic.
It's classic.
And
it'll be in the Hall of Fame.
You talked about the asymmetric, you know, like how you can, you know, reuse like a 135 hub and, right, you know, front and rear and all this. There's a lot of cool stuff going on with the Pugsley, but its geometry is pretty dated. You know, the fact that, you know, 170 hubs are like really commonly available now.
Sure.
You know, it's not like it was when the Pugsley was, you know, released. Uh-huh. So it's good to see that same kind of model get a refresh.
Can we talk about what's the difference between, and maybe we just want to go with some bullet points instead, but I mean, the Pugsley and the Wednesday versus the Wednesday and the ice cream truck. I mean, those are three.
Well, the parallels between those two are really good.
Okay.
Because, you know, Moonlander and Pugsley are kind of your more old school models, if you would.
And you can only go 4-inch on a Pugsley.
Yeah, I mean, you can go a little bit bigger than that, but that's a huge benefit to the Wednesday. Yeah. I'm trying to remember,
they can go 5-inch tires. I mean, they can do what
it can't quite go to a 5-inch. So, if I remember, it's a 4.6.
Okay.
I
think it is a 4.6.
Yeah, we'll keep talking, and I'll yes, okay. 4.6. My memory was good on that one. And that's, you know, 4.6 on an 82 mil rim. So, and that's a substantial tire. So, you know, from my experience, I mean, I've been lucky to get on a lot of different tires.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, you know, kind of to explain my evolution, I started out and I was on, you know, like Larry's. And I thought, those, you know, shit, Larry's were great compared to Endomorphs. And then I got a Nate and it blew my mind. And then, you know, I kind of jumped up to the Button Loo. So now I've kind of been, you know, testing out some other tires that are in different conditions, you know.
Right.
And I was really, really, really impressed with the Flow and Dunder Beast. I really debated it when I was writing up like my review of that, like how to necessarily evaluate them, because they were just, the bottom line is, the most fun tires I've ever been on, because they rolled fast, they rolled light, they gripped like a mother. I mean, they were awesome.
And setup tubeless pretty good?
Yeah, setup tubeless great. So they had all these different characteristics, which were really, really, really nice. And those should fit on this bike, no problem.
You've got boxes and freaking boxes of fat tires in your garage.
Yeah,
it's
I'm a tire whore.
We got to have an event over here. We know that there's Fat Camp on the other side of the lake coming up here in a couple of weeks, but we need our own Fat Camp over here. Jeez.
Yeah, speaking of Fat Camp, yeah, we got to definitely put a plug in for that.
Oh, let's do it. I mean, we'll get back to the Wednesday, but
Zion Cyclery putting on a big event on the shores of Lake Michigan.
The border of Wisconsin and Illinois, in between
A super fun site and a
nuclear reactor.
Yeah,
a
decommissioned.
Like decommissioned nuclear reactor. So.
I can't think of a better ambiance, but sounds like a great group of guys is going to come out, and they're going to have a really good time riding the beach.
And it's called Fat Camp, and, you know, we're going to have to take Fat Camp to Fat Camp.
We are already talking about logistics to drive around the lake, because
it's a quick drive.
Yep. You know, the Manistee headquarters for the
Bike Black Ribbon.
Yes.
Test crew.
Yes. We need to... we need to connect with headquarters and get our latest mission assignments, and, you know.
And it sounds like it's only going to be fun.
Yeah, there's definitely not going to be any unfun.
It involves a beach ride to a bar.
Yep.
And camping.
Yeah.
No number plates. No, none of that stuff. I mean, what's better than to ride with Uncle Gomez and Sven?
Yes, it's like going to the mountain to go, you know, commune with your gurus.
A couple of Judas goats are going to go and go to the mountain and find out. But
whatever kind of greenery is growing around there. Talk about Fat Camp there
down in Zion Cyclery.
Yeah. So back to the Wednesday, another big...
It's blue already.
Thank you. Yep, that's exactly what I was going to bring up. You know, another biggie is that it's got the 150 spacing on the front.
Right.
So you don't have to build up a different front wheel if you want to go with suspension.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's another really big plus for this thing getting modernized. You know, it's just the geometry, it's a little more kind of like... The term you always hear thrown out there is trail geometry. It's a little more chilled out. So it's actually going to be a little bit better in your deeper snow conditions. It's going to be a little bit slower handling, a little bit shorter chain stay. So it's going to be more responsive to weight shifts, all the stuff you want in the winter.
Okay.
So it's going to be a really good rig.
And I think if I remember seeing when I saw pictures of it, it's got just a shit ton of brazons. And I mean, you can
super versatile.
Yeah. You can take it where you want. You can throw the family on the back if you wanted to.
Yeah, have the ultimate commuter bike where you can like load it up with fenders and you know,
all kinds of extra weight. I mean, you could load that thing up to make it 40 pounds if you wanted to.
It's going
to
be a sweet ride.
It is.
So you know, I was really stoked to see Surly, you know, do that update.
Classic steel frame like Surly, you know.
Yep, should ride great.
What are the wheel set on that thing?
That's the other biggie. You know,
exactly.
You know, there's a lot of us out there that have been converting Surly rims tubeless, and they've been really kind in that regard.
With a little bit of elbow grease.
Yeah, you know, I have to admit, I've done a lot of experimentation
to try to a crap load of that.
Yeah.
So therefore, I don't have to because you've already done it.
Right, but the core technologies were there. They really were not far off of a truly tubeless compatible rim because they had the bead lock in there. They had a pretty tight bead tire or rim shelf tire interface. They had all the stuff that was really needed. So you didn't have to do a whole lot to end up having a decent tubeless setup with a Surly rim.
But now they made it even easier.
Yeah. And I'll be interested to get into the specifics of what that actually means. My guess is that bead shelf, they made it slightly bigger diameter so the tires fit a little bit tighter.
Sounds like kind of a future show.
It could be. I mean, we could talk.
Bead shelves and rims.
I have a lot I could end up saying about tubeless setups.
And I love the name, my other brother, Daryl.
Oh, it's perfect.
Classic.
Yeah.
You know?
So, and the thing I liked about it, though, is it's like, I mean, you know, the Daryl and stuff, I mean, those are classic rims.
Yep.
But I know I build up a lot of custom wheels for people, and those suckers are so flipping overbuilt.
Mm-hmm.
I drilled the Pajibas out of an unholy rolling Daryl.
The Pajibas.
And I've ridden it for 2 seasons. And I'm a big dude, and I ride my stuff hard.
Yeah.
And I've had zilch for issues. And I built it up a super lightweight build. You know, 2-cross, Revolution spokes, alloy nipples. And I can't break it. It's like that rim is still way overbuilt. And I drilled that sucker out, and it was like low 700s. So,
no kidding.
So, you know, I guess what my point is, a stock rolling Daryl that weighed like 860 or so. So they've dropped the weight a heck of a lot.
Where did they drop it down to?
If I remember correctly, it's right around. It's a little bit more than that. I want to say it's like 760. I can look that up here in 1 second.
Let me get my dog out of the way there. Right. There you go. Oh, there you are.
I will edit this dead space out.
Oh, I think it's kind of nice.
It's like taking a little relax.
52 states, you know?
There you go. Exactly. 690. Yeah, 690 grams.
Got it.
So it's a really nice, lightweight setup. So to go tubeless, to drop the weight considerably, I mean, we're 690. That starts to get into carbon range.
Am I going to break the bank, though? What is it? $100, $150.
And they're saying $150.
What's a Daryl usually?
It's a little bit cheaper than that, but not a whole lot.
So there's pay the extra $10, $15, $20, and
No, I think what they've done is, I mean, when you look at the design, you know, previously it was pretty primitive, just a bunch of holes.
Right.
Now they've really started to end up, you know, figuring out ways to connect up where the stress points are on the rim.
Cool.
So I'm really excited about what Surly's doing because they had a lot of stuff which nobody had really surpassed in a big way.
Right.
and they kind of jumped ahead of the pack when it comes to aluminum fat bike rims.
Gotcha. Can we stay with rims and slide down to those Kuroshiro rims?
Yeah, just don't ask me to pronounce how you... Those things are so sweet.
You're going to have to finance them over a course of 5 years with your new Honda Fiat. You know?
Well, they're bloody expensive. Don't get me wrong. Right. I'm not going to say otherwise. Right. However...
Carbon.
Well, this is... There's two categories of carbon at this point. You know, there's...
Okay.
No, there is. Because there's the people that are like...
It's allotropic rims.
there's the hand-built stuff, okay, which is head and this Kuroshiro, or however it's said. and I apologize to that company because they're doing cool stuff. But, I mean, it's a hand-built Italian company.
Okay.
Head is a hand-built American company. They have exclusive technology. It's not going overseas and kind of going into the Chinese manufacturing pool.
Oh, okay.
So if you look at, and I hate to call out companies like Borealis, but if you look at the design they ended up having carbon rims, and I could be 100% wrong, but it seemed like that got ripped off as soon as that thing was starting to like roll out of factories. There was copies of that thing.
Oh, no kidding.
You could find that same damn rim for a fraction of the price.
But you could be 100% wrong.
I could be. I totally could be.
Okay.
But
I'll read between the lines on that one.
Yeah, but I mean, if you look at, you know, the rim weights, if you look at the cross sections,
No kidding.
Yeah. And if there's a lot of companies out there, Nexty is doing some fairly unique looking rims.
Yeah.
Light Bike is another one. Yeah. There's a ton of other Chinese carbon rims. And those are what I would describe as another tier of carbon rims.
Okay. All right.
Because they're lighter than any of the aluminum offerings,
right,
but they're by no means like kind of stretching the engineering and design aspect of what carbon rims can do. Whereas like a company like Head, or this, you know, Kuroshiro company. Both of them are really kind of pushing the engineering limits, and it's because they're keeping it in house and they're doing their own R&D, and they're basically not farming it out to China.
A higher quality carbon then?
Yeah.
Okay.
So, you know, the difference is, and I don't remember exactly what these things are going for per rim. I want to say it's somewhere around $800 a rim.
But
I mean, it's...
They're Hundies, though.
There's not a U.S. price yet. It's €900, but, you know, in the head rims, they make them in two different sizes. They make it in an 80 and they make it in 100, and they're, like, comparably light to these, and they supposedly go tubeless very well. I've only kind of test ridden them. I've never actually really gotten my hands on them.
Because you can't afford it.
Yeah. But I mean, they're significantly better rims.
Okay.
And, you know, yeah, $800-900 a rim, crazy expensive.
Wow.
But they offer something compelling for that price compared to the Chinese carbon rims, which you're talking are like $300 a rim ish. And they're like halfway between, you know, aluminum world, and then these chi-chi carbon rims.
Happy wife, happy life. Okay, so I'm not, you know, I gotta, all these Kuroshiro look really cool. I'm gonna take this conversation somewhere else, but I like the inside, how they did the, where the nipples go in.
Well, and that's kind of what my point is. Like when you look at these, or you look at the heads, they're doing some really interesting stuff with the design that nobody else is doing out there. So, you know, I'm really stoked to end up seeing some advancement, some real, you know, cutting edge stuff happening. And I'm pretty bummed because as I build up this 2XL bike, I want the fattest flipping rims I can get. And I want them light, because this thing's going to be a pig if I get some really heavy rims. So unfortunately, I'm going to be going with Chinese carbon. I mean, I shouldn't say unfortunately. It's still going to be badass.
Be,
yeah, right. Yeah, I'm still really stoked about it.
But
I look at this and it's like, you know, the fact that they're offering them wider at 105 millimeters, that's another thing where they're pushing the limits. And I love it when companies push the limits, because that allows us to end up doing new and cool stuff out there on the trail that we wouldn't be able to do otherwise.
Right. Yep.
So, you know, yeah, this is bloody expensive, but it's some really cool advancement that they're doing here.
Yeah.
So I was pretty stoked to end up seeing that come out.
Also on the rim world that has come out, as recent, since this is the pipe show, is the Alchemist, the Radical Carbon Wheels.
Yeah, and that's that, you know, that's a lot of plus and plus size stuff. But I mean, that's an interesting concept. I'm really looking forward to seeing some more stuff with that. And
super
I guess
crazy design.
At this point right now, because you know, we're starting to drop company names like crazy. We're going to provide a lot of links to information about these different rims and things like that in the show notes. So if we don't explain something well, check it out there. But the Alchemist is crazy. It's kind of like this
badass name though.
Yeah, darn it, man. It's you know, it's this I-beam type thing where the inner rim bed is continuous, so you don't even have to worry about rim strips and stuff like that. And the spoke dimples are going to end up being external. So it's got some really compelling options that way. But I pretty much have only seen prototypes and stuff like that. Nobody has really like ridden it that I know of. And I'll just be interested to see what the ride characteristics and the actual weights and, you know, some of the specific details. They're not doing anything crazy as far as rim widths go.
Yeah.
But it looks like it potentially could be a super solid, like plus size or, you know, 80 mil ish fat bike rim.
Very cool. Yeah. You check that link out in the show notes. My head's kind of spinning on all these rims and, look, the glass is empty, so I suggest we take a break, and we'll be back with the final section of Fat Camp number 5.
Yep.
Welcome back, campers. Like some mountain bike rides or some fat bike rides or some plus bike rides, sometimes you get caught in the trail and you just got to go a little bit longer. Like
you're feeling the groove.
Like this podcast. And so even though we're an hour ride in for your commute home or wherever you're doing, we still have a couple things that we need to talk about that's coming out recently from Eurobike.
So, I mean, Scott Bikes. We got to talk about them because they released a lot of really, 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 really cool stuff.
They and went it's all in.
Yeah, it's not the kind of bike that I want to ride here, but if I was going to go out west, oh, I would love to rock
you
that
think
bike.
That's the place to do it.
Yeah, well, they released multiple bikes, so right. we can talk about different things.
12 of them they released. 11 or 12?
I don't know if they were all plus bikes or not, but okay. I mean, they had several bikes that were in like the 120 travel range. And, you know, with a B plus setup, which is ideal. You know, I love my 29 plus. 29 plus is an amazing setup. However, if I was going to be running full suspension or if I was going to be running like longer travel suspension, something over 100 mils, I wouldn't be thinking 29 plus. I'd only be thinking B plus.
Totally.
And, you know, Scott just nailed that. They did it. Like, they came out with some just badass bikes. And along with that, they seem to have a close relationship with Schwalbe, okay. And there's some pretty darn cool B-plus Schwalbe tires that were also released for those bikes.
Schwalbe tire 29 are awesome. I, you know, keep the same tread patterns and put it on a plus.
I've always been a big fan of Schwalbe tires. Yeah. They do a really good job.
Huh, okay. But no 29 plus, just 27 and a half.
Yeah. No, and, you know, like I said, you know, I'm a big fan of the 29 plus versus the B plus. However, for these bikes,
different locations too.
Yeah, exactly. For these bikes, you know, B plus setup is a really, really, really
so
good
Scott
setup.
Scott just ramps it up.
Yep. Scott definitely did. They did a great job. And,
yeah.
And it's, you know, this is more a commentary on the sort of the media than anything else. It's interesting to start seeing some reviews come in about, you know, the Scott bikes where, you know, like one of these editor guys would end up going out there and riding the 29 version, and then they'd ride the B plus version,
right?
And they would actually be able to comment on it. And they're starting to like kind of like get a feel for what this plus thing is all about. But another company that really kind of dropped a bomb as far as longer travel plus bikes, DaVinci. They've got a really nice looking bike they just ended up releasing. Once again, it's much more oriented towards out west.
Yeah.
You know, 120 front and rear, pretty slack front end. You know, fairly short chain stays. So it's going to be a fun bike to end up riding.
Full suspension.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I mean, and not just full suspension, it's full suspension. I mean, it's 120.
Plus, it's
120 mils front and rear. So, you know, that's really going to soak up a lot.
Yeah,
and
you won't have to pick your line. You can
just blast through.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think that's going to be just a super, super fun bike. And how can you not like the name, you know, Hendrix?
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, it's, it makes me smile every time I saw it.
You know, when that stuff comes out, I'll look at it and I'm like, nah, you know what? I'm in the land of the hand. I'm in the Midwest and I'm not going to need it. But
yeah, but if I was up at Copper Harbor, I would, like, if I could rent that bike at Copper Harbor,
even when it's like,
I'd be all about
vacation,
it.
Yeah.
I'd
be like, well, what do you want to rent?
Oh, so I'd love to ride that bike.
I need to pay more attention to what the hell's going on around me.
I'm really stoked to see some of the plus stuff go in that direction because, you know, we have realized a lot of the positives when it comes to 29 plus in the Midwest, but it's not just here, it's everywhere. And if
this
you just
the first time this has been said on the show.
Yeah. No, we're not like religious zealots about our plus stuff.
You can convert to plus so easily.
Yeah. No, but I mean, it's cool to see some stuff that I would want to ride out west. I'd want to ride up in the UP. I'd want to ride a lot of different places.
Now, do you think that this is more of a philosophical discussion?
Philosophical?
Yeah.
Ooh, wow. I've never heard that term before.
Hang on, let me take one more sip. A philosophical discussion. Do you think that this, and we may have talked about this before, the surge of plus bikes is response to customers, or is it to force customers?
I don't think it's either. Okay. I think it's, you know, bike companies
doing what they need to do.
Well, they're offering something up that hasn't been offered before. Like, what I think's happened is, you know, like, if you look at Trek, I think the reason why, you know, I would typically describe Trek as a rather conformist company. You know, it's very conservative or whatever. You know, it's like it's
pretty safe company.
Yeah, and they blew it out of the water going 29 plus. And I think the reason why is because they tested it and they were geeked out of their gourd.
And this all goes back to Krampus?
No. Well, the Krampus was really the 29 plus.
Yeah.
But this came back to their own testing and what came out in the Stash.
Right. Oh, yeah, yeah.
You know, the Stash is a really badass bike. And, you know, that got released way earlier in the summer. But, you know,
if you're going to test ride one bike,
I would not want that. I would want something different. But that is a badass bike nonetheless.
Right. Yeah.
It does some really cool stuff as far as the playfulness and, you know, things like that. So I think there's some people out there getting stoked. And I think there's a lot of companies out there that don't want to be behind, you know, these trends. You know, the Boost thing, to a great extent, really was to open up the tire market. And let's face it, you know, fatter tires are more fun in a lot of conditions.
Yeah.
So I think there's a lot of people out there that either are viewing this as being sort of the next horizon because, you know, fatter tires have been more fun for a lot of people in a lot of other ways.
Sure.
Or they got on it themselves and they're like, holy shit, this is really effing cool.
Right, right.
You know, it's like, I want a piece of this action. It's like, I want to build this bike.
Huh.
Okay. So
anyway,
we'll see. I mean, like, I know we're preaching to the tribe here,
right,
but, you
exactly.
know, plus and fat is really cool.
Going, they don't know what they're talking about.
So another really cool thing that this came out over the sort of the summer bike show or whatever you want to call it, product
summer
release
bike
stuff.
Show.
Trek, you know, they are offering up the 27.5 by 3.8 Hodag. So I'll be interested to hear about that. I mean, that's going to be a cool tire. You know, the concept is it's the same diameter as like a Bud and a Lou. So, you know, that's a pretty cool thing.
Can you, now, those tires can go, wait a minute, whoa. It's a 27 and a half?
27 and a half by four.
By four.
So 650B by four, whatever you want to call it.
And you can put that on any bike?
No. So, okay, kind of to put this into context, this all has to do with
back
wheel
to
diameter.
What size inch bike you have?
Yeah. So, you know, the Bud and the Lou were revolutionary in terms of how big a diameter, because they were the biggest diameter offered for a while there. Like when you had a 26 by 5 inch bike or whatever you want to call it, you know, that thing was like 30 and a half inches in diameter and there was no bike even close. 29 inch, you know, diameter was big previous to that.
Sure.
You know, and that's the same as our 26 by 4. So, you know, the Bud and the Lou broke new ground in a big way. And then that kind of opened the door for 29 plus because that's the same diameter. So people were kind of thinking about, okay, how to design a wheel around this, you know, this big a diameter.
This similar diameter.
Yeah. So now this is the third sort of iteration or whatever you want to call it from the Bud and the Lou because it still fits within that same outside diameter. So your 29 plus frame, your, you know, 26 by 5 inch frame should fit a 650
by 4.
Right. Well, I guess maybe if it's a 29 plus, it wouldn't. It might not have the width, but it's going to have the height.
Right.
So this kind of takes that whole diameter thing and now presses it out a little wider.
Barely.
Yeah.
But it's all basically similar diameter, just playing with different.
Yeah.
Just
so,
how to get that done.
So what excites me about this is that there's sometimes in a race condition where a 4-inch tire is faster. Now, this is going to tamp down that same 4-inch wide amount, but it's going to be this long patch. So it's going to have lower rolling resistance, especially in soft conditions, than a 26 by 4-inch tire or a 26 by 5-inch tire, which a 26 by 5-inch would probably end up having a similar, you know, like contact patch. You know, you're probably going to run similar pressures, blah, 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 blah. You know, it's going to be kind of like jumping from the 26er to the 29er. You know, in mountain bike terms, but we're going to go from, you know, like a 26 by 4 to, you know, a 650 B by 4. So it's going to be this kind of bump up, bigger diameter. You're going to be able to run a narrower tire and still get the same amount of float, and it's going to carve up really well. So I think in race conditions, it's going to be a really, really sweet setup.
Oh, Dad.
Yeah. Kind of a funky name, but.
No. Kind of a stupid name, but I mean, we got rims and
we got the 4.7 Barbagazzi. Hopefully, I pronounced that right from track. No, so and that's I guess you know, and I'm trying to like rein you back in already, but yeah, so you know, Trek's talking about offering up one of the big boy tires, you know, like a 4.7 ish tire, and I don't know what it actually measures out. I don't know what rim they're on. I don't have a lot of specifics, but it's good to end up seeing them start to jump into kind of that Bud and Lou category, kind of like how we're seeing Maxxis and their Minion. I don't remember exactly what the acronyms are. It's FRF, and then there's like an RF, R or something like that. I don't know. But that's a really, really promising tire. I had a few of those in my garage for a while as a prototype pair, and the size, exactly the same as a Bud and Lou. But it looked like the rear tire, very similar tread pattern to the Dunder Beast, and I don't know if the Dunder Beast was the original or if they ripped it off somebody else, but that was a kick-ass tread last winter. So to go a 4.8 instead of like a 4.5-inch tire, hell yeah, sign me up.
Well, whatever they do, they better give it a gosh darn good name, better than the Hodad.
Minion? Yeah.
I no, Trek. You're saying Trek coming
out.
Oh,
you're talking the Barbagazzi or whatever. Yeah.
Jeez.
So that was another kind of exciting thing on the horizon. So.
What else is on our list here? Jeez.
Well, we don't really have a whole lot else. We got the same link that, you know, fatbike.com already ended up doing on their Friday show with the lightest full suspension fat bike.
Oh, you do that with me.
That was just kind of Denmark company. They ended up mountain bike fat bike company. They ended up, I think it was, what is it? It's like Max or something like that. They ended up doing a really, really chichi build and came in like 29 pounds or so, a little bit less than that. And I mean, looked like a really sweet ride.
I'm listening to Fat Bike Radio last weekend. I don't know how I could have missed it. Those guys got a little carried away Wednesday night. Holy cow. Dare you call in to Gomez and Sven on Wednesday. Fasten your seatbelts because
no doubt
you're going to be on a trip for a while.
Yep.
But, They did cover that. Yeah, I do recall that now.
Yep. So that was pretty cool to end up seeing. You know, so there's some people pushing the limits that way. You know, shout out to Jason Lowitz up in Traverse City, who I saw do the X100. He did the full 100 mile on a full suspension carbon buck saw with whiskey rims and stuff. It was a sweet setup, and he rocked it. He ended up having a really good finish. So I ended up passing him out there on the course, and, you know, I was very impressed with his riding. So
sounds good. Jeez. So, just when you think that technology, they're going to have a technology fat bike show. I was like, well, how many shows you got? Well, I see 10 more already.
Yeah, just wait for the latest release of stuff.
Jeez.
Wait, man,
yeah, when Gomez
this
gets
is
back
exciting.
From Interbike.
You know, maybe we'll be lucky and there'll be more cool stuff released to Interbike we didn't end up finding out about here.
Exactly. They're holding back.
So, as you're probably hearing this, Interbike will be going down. Think happy thoughts, light a few candles, do whatever you have to do, and maybe the fat gods will rain down some more luscious technology for our enjoyment.
Amen, my brother. Hallelujah. Thanks for listening, folks, for another Fat Camp.
Cheers. Our European techno music as an ode to Eurobike was provided by the Free Music Archive, with the artist being Roglock and the name of the track being Europe. Thank you very much for listening, and happy trails.